you just tuned into the hippest way to start and grow your indie author career. Learn the ins, the outs, and all the all-arounds of self-publishing with the team from D2D and their industry-influencing guests. You're listening to Self-Publishing Insiders with Draft2Digital.
Hello, and welcome to Self-Publishing Insiders. My name is Mark Leslie Lefebvre, and I am the Director of Business Development for Draft2Digital. And I am so honored to have with me in the virtual D2D studios, Heather Brooks. Heather, welcome to our live broadcast.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get into the Right Women Book Fest and the network and all the cool things going on there, can you tell our viewers, our listeners, a little bit about you and your writing life?
Well, I wrote my first book in 2015. I started to write it as straight erotica fairy tale, but I couldn't stick to the genre. I kept wanting to kind of build the world out a little bit.
Right.
And so I ended up doing sort of an erotic romance. At the time, I didn't know that's what it was called because it was brand new to publishing. I just knew I wanted to write a fairy tale and it had some naughty bits in it. And I got that book published in 2015 independently. I had experience years before that trying to publish a mystery traditionally, and I didn't have a lot of luck. So I thought, you know, by 2015, e-publishing had become a lot more accessible.
Right.
So then that is a series, and I've written two other books in that, and I've begun writing a series, a witchy mystery series that'll be out next year, and I will be continuing that. It's the Red August series, is the fairy dark fairy tale erotic romance. And then I guess I write about love a lot, like who you're supposed to love, who you're not supposed to love, and strong women characters. I know that's cliched, but it's important to me. And different ages and sizes. That's also important to me.
Oh, that's good. So it's very inclusive. And that's one thing about the network we're going to be talking about shortly. But okay, so I'm wearing, in honor of Halloween is coming up, and you've got sort of a timely release for Halloween. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, so that first book I published in 2015 is Red August, and I'm re-releasing it with a new cover with content warnings, which weren't as much of a thing then. Right. And there are some things that I think people would want content warnings for, and it's got a little bit of an edit, you know, that, you know, after 7 years, you kind of see some things, you're like, I might like to change that or add something even. I did add a couple of things. So that'll be re-released on Halloween. It'll probably start as a limited release on ebook, and then over November it will go wide in paperback. And then I'll be re-releasing the next two books, all that were in the series, with brand new covers and content warnings as well. And then I'll be working on book four of that series, which is called The Shifters of Mohegan Falls. Right now it's Red August, which is the one that's being re-released, Red Archer and Red Hunter.
Okay.
And that is exciting for me because I love Halloween. Halloween's in the book. Halloween's like my favorite holiday. So
Halloween, the preparations for Halloween in our house begin usually the middle of November for the forthcoming year.
Over the next year.
Yeah, exactly. In the comments, Lexi says, love when the spicy story develops an entire world around it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
So you started off with this very local group of people. Can you talk about the women authors of Maryland?
Yeah, well, so like I said, I published in 2015, and I started, as I worked on this process and I would reach out to women authors, I couldn't always find them. Like, I like to talk to women authors because I feel like women authors have unique issues that sometimes men authors don't have to deal with. So I wanted to start a group for women where they could feel included and safe, and we could talk about our particular issues. And so in 2019, when I couldn't find a group that was specific to women, even though there are some wonderful writing groups here in Maryland, Maryland Writers Association is wonderful. There's a Writers Center in Bethesda. There's some great writer support here, but I wanted a women-specific one. So I started the Women Authors of Maryland, tiny little meet in person at the cafe or at my house author salon. And that was, you know, it could be range from 2 people to 10 people, maybe 12 on a big day. And then the pandemic happened in 2020. So that was 2019. The pandemic happened in 2020. And I moved to make it more virtual. And then I realized some people were asking me, I'm not from Maryland, can I join? And so I changed the name to the Write Women Network so that women, women writers from anywhere in their career and anywhere that could get on Facebook could join the group. And then we would have these salons like the one that you did recently. And then we can have like somebody from California can learn all about Draft to Digital in my little salon group, which I love. So
I like that. I like that inclusivity. So you started off with the local regional group and it was to connect with other women. It was basically mm-hmm. to share and help each other, et cetera.
Encourage mostly.
Let's talk about that encouragement and how important that was, because you changed it during the pandemic when, we can't actually gather. We can't gather together. And did you guys just reached 500 members?
At 506 as of this morning.
506. Oh my God. So you just
six since yesterday.
You left 500 behind in the dust.
Right.
But,
Zoomed ahead.
Those people primarily in the U.S. or do you have people internationally?
I think it's mostly U.S. I think it's because of my boosts that I've done for ads for my stuff. I think that sometimes people see the two things connected, and my stuff tends to be boosted locally. When I mean boosted, I mean like on Facebook or Instagram. And because my book fest is very closely connected to the Write Women Network, those two things have a lot of local focus, but I know that there are women from, all over, and I don't know internationally specifically. I usually only know when I'll say, this is happening, and somebody's like, oh, I'm in Australia, or whatever. But I think it's mostly continental United States. But everybody's welcome. If I know the time difference can make it hard to connect live, but that's what I like about the face. Facebook has its problems, but one thing I like about their group system is very user friendly.
Yeah, that is good. And there's a number of people on it already. So it's a platform that people are somewhat familiar with already. They can just go in. And even if they don't want anything else to do with Facebook, the cat videos, the arguments, all the things that happen on Facebook, the divisive stuff, they can just bookmark, their favorite group and just say, okay, I'm going to come in here. I'm not going to get distracted by anything else. I'm going to go hang with my writer peeps and do some stuff. So let's talk a little bit more. I want to talk about the salons, and then we'll bring it into what's happening in our favorite month of the year, October. So let's talk about the salon. So I did a talk a couple nights ago for a group of writers as part of the salon. And that was recorded. And that's something that even though because of the time of day that it was, people may have just been getting home from work, may not have finished taking care of stuff with their family and they watch it at a later date. And I was presenting, obviously, some background for, okay, this is what Draft to Digital does. And this is how we can help you, et cetera. What are the other kinds of content that you provide in those salons?
By the way, I learned a ton of stuff from your salon, so I was really grateful that I could be there for it. I love hosting these things because I learned so much. But so we had, for example, many of the authors in our group are newer authors, or some people who are just thinking about being authors or thinking about writing. And I think that I try to really gear things towards the beginning writer to give them help where I felt like I needed help or things I didn't understand. So for example, we had a great editor on there that talked about the importance of professional editing. We had a professional beta reader come on and talk about beta reading. What is beta reading? If you're a new author, you might not understand beta reading, where it comes in the process, how it works, what to expect. A lot of people actually asked a beta reader when I saw some authors online, newer authors complaining that a beta reader had charged them I was like, wait a minute, beta readers should be allowed to charge you. Why are you upset about that? That's work.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I had a beta reader come on and talk about, you know, what to expect, if you pay or you don't pay, those kinds of things. And then we'll have a PA be coming on next month
to talk about
what a personal assistant does and how they can help you and the prices you can expect for those kinds of services. So those are some of the things that we've done. We had some of them are just very basic publishing, you know, like, if you don't know where to even begin, what are the steps? So we've had people who are both traditionally published talk about what that process is like versus publishing yourself or going with a small indie publishing situation.
So I love the fact that this is a place, because, you know, there's a lot of people who think, okay, I've always wanted to write. I don't know where to start. Where do I go? And it seems to be just such an open and I'm going to pop this comment up from Jim, who says, you know, support and inclusivity are two of my favorite words. So it seems to be a place that offers support, that offers inclusivity, but also is very open to beginning writers. It's not a, hey, yeah, we've been doing this for a long time, we're going to judge you or any of those things. Is you really welcome people in and provide them valuable insights. Yes.
It's a mentorship space. It's a space for mentoring. And we have authors who have been there since the very first little group that we had, and they know and they understand. They've been doing this a while. I've been doing it a little while. I still plenty to learn. But it's a space for mentoring newer authors for sure. And it doesn't matter. You could be a young author like Ariel Seeling, who has published, I think she's published up to 35 books now, and she's in her 20s. So she can have a young author like Ariel come in, and she'll do a salon for us. And she could be mentoring authors my age, you know, because they're new authors. It's more about where they are in the situation and their path as being a writer.
I like that. So let's talk a little bit about the in-person event that is happening. Is this the first time you've been in person, or is this a return to in-person after a little bit of a break?
So in 2019 was our first in-person year of the Write Women Book Festival, and it did pretty well. First years, you never know how they're going to go. It was about 35 vendors at the time. We had about 275 visitors, something like that. That was very good. And and there are a lot of resources you don't get in a first year that we now have, like, for example, the rangers come help, the park rangers come help us do parking and things like that. But the second year was 2020, and Carden is my co-organizer and my outreach director, who is my rock. She and I decided that we didn't want to lose momentum when the pandemic came and the parks shut down and nobody could go anywhere. So we did it all virtual, and it's all the information still online on our website under the 2020 tab. So we did an online store, which essentially profiles and bios and links and things like that. And then we did live and recorded interviews, workshops, readings, things like that. I did a online tea party, fantasy writers tea party kind of a thing. So we did those things. And then in 2021, last year, which was our third year, we did a hybrid. It was still limited capacity allowed for the park service at the time. So we had about 20 vendors that year. And then, so it was like half of it was online, maybe even 2/3 of it was online. And then the rest of it was in person. There were some authors who didn't want to come because they hadn't been fully vaccinated, or we also asked that people be vaccinated during last year's event. So you know, like, some things kept people away. We still had a good amount of visitors though. And then, this year we have over 100 vendors and
100 vendors.
Yeah.
Wow.
Most of those authors.
The authors will have their tables and display their wares.
Yep. So we'll have some will be under our tents. We have a certain amount of space within our tents. And then a number of them will be bringing their own 10x10 pop-ups. And it's a one-day event on Saturday, October 8th from 12 to 5. If you can carpool, come carpooling because, you know, there is a limited amount of parking. We did get access to an auxiliary lot with shuttles. So hopefully that'll help. But we're so excited about it. We're going to have a romance tent that is going to be doing panels all day. And then we'll have a classroom in which you will be in giving a workshop there for our authors that come to the event, because it's a reader and writer event. It's a reader and author event. And then there's a little building that used to be, it's a historic property. Yep. So out front, it used to belong to a Supreme Court judge, and there's a little law office out front. And that's where we'll have some mini salons in that room. And then there'll be story time. There'll be mermaid story time, drag queen story time, firefighter story time with a female firefighter, as well as live poetry all day with the EC Poetry and Prose with Patty Little Pie Ross, who is well known in this area in Prince George's County for her group. Her and her group all have a lot of poets who are in the area, and they will be doing live poetry all day. So it's going to be really cool. We also have live jazz and harp band.
This is going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to, it's atmospheric. So we also have a few vendors that are not book related that are like homemade bath product, housemade, okay. I'm in restaurant mode, homemade bath products, like, you know, boutiques, bath products, and what else, like journals and things like that, that okay. I think kind of go well with reading and book loving. And, you know, so who doesn't want to have a cupcake? We have a cupcake vendor this year. So who doesn't want to have a cupcake, buy themselves a bath bomb and go get a book, and you're all set.
So I know I'm going to be there doing one of the workshops, one of the presentations for specifically geared to help writers. What other writer centric things, presentations or presenters, are going to be featured or spotlit or included in the day?
So in it'll be a variety. There are, you know, writing coaches, people who have done, for example, Kickstarters, who are going to tell you how to do a Kickstarter if you want to, how to get in touch with your journaling side, poetry, just like a variety of, there's no, the romance tent will have romance panels all day, for example.
Right. But that makes a lot of sense.
Yes. And then, but the stuff in the classroom is one author or one presenter giving some kind of mentorship or education or workshop about a specific topic. And those are listed under the event tab on our website.
That is cool. Now, I know someone we both respect and admire who will not be there in person, but will be presenting virtually. Is that going to be a live virtual, or is that pre-recorded? The one and only Erin Wright of the Wide for the Wind fame?
Yes, we are so excited to have her as our keynote speaker this year. It will be recorded, and there will also be a chance for people. I don't want to give away too much, but I'll give you a little bit of the scoop since you know her, but there will be a special workshop that people will be able to take with Erin Wright. We have not announced it yet, but it's wonderful. I can't wait to announce that.
And so this is virtual too. So it means that people who are attending virtually can enjoy it just as well, right?
It will be a live virtual, not on the day of, so it won't conflict with the 8th, but the keynote speech will be recorded, but this right. special workshop, which I don't know if you're watching this, let me just tell you, it's a little hard to get in with Erin, right? Because she's good at what she does and her schedule is packed. So we have arranged a special situation in which people will be able to sign up for a group workshop. Watch for that information on our website. I will let you know when that's all together, but that will be announced as soon as we have it sorted out. And it's a really good opportunity to get live with Erin in a way that is much harder to do individually. I've been lucky. I got in way ahead. Like I booked months in advance. So.
And one thing that I neglected to properly ask is I'm coming down, I'm driving down there so I can bring my draft to digital banner. Right. We're sending some swag for the bags and stuff. Am I going to need to bring a tent as well, or do I get to squeeze into the big one? I can do either way. I just want to. I thought I'd ask you live, put you on the spot.
Oh well, we can put you in the classroom. We can put you under partial one of our 10x10s, or you can bring your own and have your whole space to yourself. It's up to you. We will accommodate because you've been so supportive and so wonderful. We cannot wait. We know you're just, I'm going to put you on the spot. We know you're going to work with us next year and support us next year too.
There you go. Yeah. I'll probably just bring the tent that I have for outdoor events and that frees up your options and your spaces.
Okay. And we're going to 2 days next year. It got so popular. We're going to do 2 days next year, probably a reader focused day and an author focused day, but we already have. So I put up, if there are any authors watching this who are interested in participating with this event, if you go to the website, up at the top on the right is an author interest form for 2023. We've already got 140 authors who have filled that out. So
wow, for next year.
For next year. So we may have to like split or I don't know. I mean, this property is only so big. So we'll have to figure that out. Yeah. But I'm good at pivots and I'm good at figuring out.
Excellent. And for anyone who is listening to this in the future on our podcast feed, the website Heather is talking about is thewritewomenbookfest.org. Just like it sounds.
W-R-I-T-E.
Yeah, not R-I-G-H-T. Right. It's right. Right. Like what we're passionate about doing. The act of.
TikTok always does, you know, when you do the audio, the captions, it always does. I have to go in and correct every single right to right. So.
That's true. So you also talked, I think before we went live, we were chatting and you were talking about doing these small weekend writing retreats with workshops, but you had a very specific focus for those workshops. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I'm going to do my first retreat next April. It's very small, 5 people or less. It's a weekend style. And the focus is women over 40 the focus will be either who want to write their first book or manuscript. And then also I'll probably branch out into publishing information at some point for just like editing and refining your book and things like that. And then we'll see what 2024 holds. But next year will be my first writing retreats that I'll be offering. And the focus is on the first time writer over 40, women over 40. I think a lot of women, you know, they get their kids raised, they get them out the door. Now, this isn't exclusively true. Some women just have a career of one kind and then they reach their middle age and they're like, I want to write now. I've been putting off my book forever. And but don't have with the mentorship and the confidence and the imposter syndrome and all that. Sometimes you just don't feel like, and I was like this, like, I don't deserve to write a book or, you know, people spend their whole lives going to school to learn to write a book. Who am I to write a book? You know, so you have to kind of overcome those things. And I think women definitely have a roles that they feel they have to fill. And I'm here to give them permission.
I love that because again, it's never too late to start if you want to. If you've always wanted to write a book, you've got great mentors and great support and great inclusivity. Even guests that we had on the podcast last week, Jenny, who popped up this comment, awesome, love it. I'm a 50 year old new writer, so you know, again, just saying yes, you can do this. And for those who aren't sure and want to be able to connect, this is a great opportunity to find those people who are just as passionate about writing and also passionate about, I think, wanting to support and wanting to help other writers, because you get it, right?
Yeah. And that's partly what the Book Fest is about as well. Like when I started the Book Fest because I look for women focused book lists. Like there are genre focused ones for sure. Like if you went to a romance book fest, you'd mostly find women there. But I wanted one that was women focused because, like I said, I think women face unique issues. But it's definitely one of those situations where I just want to help women achieve their goals, you know, to give them permission to do those things and to be happy and feel like that they've at least done the thing that they set out to do, or maybe they're not even ready to set out to do it. Am I ready to set out to do it? And I'm here to answer that question. Right. Yes, you are. And the Book Fest also is to make, even though we have plenty of traditionally published authors, indie authors still now, there's still this this like side eye that we get from the publishing industry. And it's I'm so here true. To make indie published people, self-published people feel like $1 million because they are a star, they're the main character in their story, and they deserve recognition and to have their voice heard.
I love that. Thank you. I'm going to dig into the comments and share just some of the things that we see. That we see this from Ikari Book says, this is cool. I think most authors need to network more often. Thanks. Thank you for doing this kind of thing. Yeah. And then you were talking about beta reading and Write Your Family History says beta reading so important, which sort of leads to another comment from Jenny, who said, I had beta readers pushing me in a direction I did not want to go. I felt bad at first for dropping them, but it's my story. And so the question there is that a common thing where the beta reader and the writer, it's not necessarily a match made in heaven?
I think that that's true. One of the things that our beta reader talked about, she's been on twice, was how you have to be a good match with the author, and she will do an intake sheet and talk to the clients. If you ask family and friends or whatever to do it, you're in a whole different boat. But speaking from professional beta reading standpoint, I think that you can definitely have a mismatch. But the way I approach beta reading is I will take whatever feedback they have, and then I will decide what has merit or value for me. Right. And then I integrate it. I have a thick skin now. I was as a painter, a sculptor and a photographer. I've been doing art a long time. I did body focused art, you know, body image art and things like that. So I have a very thick skin about things. So I'm just like, that's your opinion. I asked for your critical feedback, but some people, one thing that I found really interesting that Kristen said, her name's Kristen West. One of the things I found really interesting that she said was that some authors don't actually want critical feedback. And so she asked a question on her intake. Do you want me to just tell you nice things? And like, do you just want good feedback or do you want critical feedback? Because some authors actually don't really want, maybe they just need the boost. You know, I don't know. I, if I'm paying somebody for beta reading, I want to know everything I'm doing, you know, whether it clinks or clanks anywhere. So, but yeah. So I think that's valid to say, okay, this beta reader is not for me, and to maybe move on to a different one.
Fair enough. And I imagine this same thing would be true for working with an editor, right? I mean, that's much earlier, obviously, in the process, but the same for thing sure. goes for editors?
Oh, yeah. Many professional editors will definitely tell you, yeah, some won't read certain genres and some, you know, won't edit certain genres. So I think you can have a mismatch there as well. Just like with any business, you can have a mismatch. And I don't give up on editing for Pete's sake, or don't give up on beta reading. Never do that. Just find the right one.
I like that. And just a reminder that with beta readers or with editors, ultimately, you are in charge. It's your IP. This is your product you're paying for. It's and you can decide to use all or some or none of the feedback that you get. I mean, I've found in my own writing experience, I usually, when I'm working with an editor, I usually take about 75 to 80% of their suggestions, but there's some things that I, you know, draw a line in the sand and say, no, this is a hill I'm going to die on. This is really important that it be this way, maybe for some other reason that's important right. to me as a writer, or something I haven't revealed about a character that I'm not going to reveal for a few books. I don't know, but there are those things where I will kind of, you know, not argue, professionally fight with them. And sometimes I'll do it to challenge.
You're like, okay, thank you for your feedback. And then you go from there.
Yeah. Jenny comment says, yes, I want critical feedback. Love the intake form idea. My book one had no room for sex, and they wanted me to Game of Thrones it up. That's a good Game of Thrones it up. That's a good one with the sex. And so again, yeah, that was your decision. There's no room for this in my book. So yeah, that's not the kind of book you're going to get from me. At least not with book one. So that's kind of cool.
That's a tone too. Like, if that's something you're not wanting to write regularly anyway, you're setting a tone.
Yeah. Going back into another chain of comments. So Lexi says it can be good having a network of people with their own unique perspectives that also share common experiences and can be there to aid with your writing journey.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
That was like a namaste sort of.
Yes. Namaste.
For anyone who's listening, you just made the gesture.
Yeah. I forget this is going to be for ears.
Well, eventually, right now the videos will always be available to watch, but just for anyone who's happening to be listening. So.
Absolutely.
Write Your Family History asks, would you agree that the way to build confidence in writing is just start with what you have and improve as you go?
I would say yes. One of the things we talked about in the salon that Mark recently did with us was, what did you call it when you have too many options?
Analysis paralysis.
Analysis paralysis. So there are so many things to learn. I'm going into 8 years of self-publishing, and I'm still learning new things all the time. I go to salons like this. I listen to podcasts like Johanna Penn's podcast. I visit Wide for the Win, which is, you know, a great Facebook group that Mark Leslie is in. And I'm learning those things all the time. And it can be overwhelming because you see people going back and forth about, well, you know, what should I publish on this platform? Where do I get an editor? And what my feeling is that you cannot publish a book that you don't write, and you cannot edit a manuscript that's not been written.
Yeah.
If you don't write the book, it cannot be published. So first step always is writing the book. So just focus on that. And then you can look, like, there are people who want to have 10 steps ahead. They want to have their marketing plan. They want to have their launch party and their pre-sale. And that's fine if that's what you want to do. I feel like those kinds of things come after a few books. Mm-hmm. Like, you learn how to do them as you go, as opposed to knowing all of that ahead and then writing your book. So it also kind of, one of the things I really learned that was hard to learn coming from an artistic background is that books is business, and you have to learn the business side of it. And so that is part of what I learned in my meetings with Aaron Wright, was things like making sure to have certain keywords and having my subtitles and my, you know, for my series and all these things that could have helped me years ago had I known about them.
Right.
But I wouldn't have written the book if I had to learn all that, because I would have been worried about all that stuff. So yes, just start where you are. Think about if you want to plot your book, great. If you don't want to plot it, if you're not a plotter though, I highly recommend having a goal date to be done. Like, when I wrote my first book that I ever wrote, which was back in like 2001 or something, it was my first manuscript, I should say.
Right.
I wrote 3,000 words a day, period. Just every single day. And I had a book done in a couple of months. If you're not going to be a plotter, you definitely need to have some goals set for yourself for your first book so that you actually finish it.
Yeah, I like that. And the goal could be a word count, a daily word count. It could be participating in NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, where,
yes, that's
you know, 50,000 words by the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
It could be. And in my case, what I often do is when I'm working with a traditional publisher, I've got the contract deadline on when I have to turn in the manuscript. Or when I'm indie publishing, I've got the agreement and the contract signed with an editor that agrees that I'm going to get the manuscript to my editor by that date. And boy, does that ever motivate me.
These are great ways to help make you have that finish point, because especially when you're self-editing, like you don't have an outside voice going, I need this by.
Yeah.
You're the one that's going, I need this by. It can just drag on.
I don't listen to myself.
You don't listen to
I don't listen to that guy. 12 years of giving authors the same advice to write in a series, and I only started following it a couple of years ago. So I should pay attention once in a while.
Eventually you listen to yourself.
Eventually I hear that nagging voice. Like, that whiny voice in the background, Mark, that's you. Yeah. So I want to pop up this question that came in comment sort of for clarity from Write Your Family History is, could you clarify plotting a book? I think you might have a definition that's different than what I understand. So what is plotting a book to you?
Plotting a book to me is, and I did this with that first book where I wrote 3,000 words every day, which is I did an outline.
So you did a full outline, right?
A full outline. Of what each what the chapter title was going to be, what that chapter would contain. And then there are, of course, various theories about the rhythms of the, you know, like save the cat and things like that, are various rhythms you should have, things,
right,
points at which things. I didn't know that back then, but I know that now because I've taken workshops. But the plotting would be a person who plans out, and it can be very detailed or just maybe, you know, you want to get from this point, and at the end of the book, this is what you want to happen. You kind of loosey goosey in the middle, but plotting, meaning you have a plan for the book. You should still try to set deadlines for yourself. Otherwise, again, they can stretch on.
Okay. I like that. Thank you. I'm going to go back. We're going to go back to beta. The comments about beta readers is coming up in the chat a lot. So Write Your Family History says beta readers can help me know when I'm not well understood. For instance, I wrote about using a product during a stage show that others wouldn't understand, and the feedback from the beta readers helped me explain more, obviously, because this writer probably has a background in theater and understands that, but someone else goes, what's that? Like glow tape is one thing, for example, we used a lot to mark things in theater.
I'm a theater baby, so yeah. I
know. Yeah, so, yep. but then the beta reader goes, what's glow tape?
What's glow tape?
Yeah.
That's an inside joke. This book is for theater nerds.
And then the other thing is, Lexi says, one thing I feel I would look for from a beta reader would be reading from a perspective I don't have, but might appear in characters in my story. As a white woman, some things could totally not register to me in a way that it could for others. And I would say, you know, as a male trying to write it from a female perspective, that's where people can give me insights and say, no, Mark, that's not how you do this thing that you have no clue about, obviously.
Yes. I could think of some famous examples, but I'll refrain at the moment. But
there's no breasted boobilies going on here, right? No.
Okay. That's the one. and this is also a place where you could get a sensitivity reader. If you are writing diverse cast and you approach anything from the perspective of that person's lived experiences. And I see this with fat representation a lot. I'm a plus size woman. I see people write fat characters and I'm like, you know, can be very stereotyped or whatever. But I think that a fat person can write a fat character better because we have that lived experience. But you can have sensitivity readers. We definitely, you know, most they're varying opinions about whether or not you should be writing a different person than what your lived experience is. And that's why we have Own Voices books, for example, and lists and things like that, which are great because then you know that the person who wrote it is writing from a lived experience. But we also want to have, like, I grew up in a military environment. And so we had many races all around me all the time. I grew up with various races. So that's what I'm familiar with. But I'm a white woman. So I've never lived as a black man or a black woman. So I would never write from their lived experience.
Right.
But I might like to have a black woman character in my story just because I want a diverse cast of people. And some people don't think you should do that either. And again, this is where we have the choice of what we read.
No, I agree. And I think and really, really important. We're seeing a lot of it in the media now related to, let's say, The Little Mermaid is Representation matters.
It does.
Children want to look and see people who are like them, like Uhura in Star Trek, which was unheard of. An officer, right? So, but that's where you can run into the risk of without sensitivity readers, or even the beta readers can also have a specialty in certain sensitivities too, right? Whether it's gender, sexuality, whether it's body size, whether it's different cultures as well. I think that's really, really important to do the research, because you don't, I think it's kind of like, and this used to be something I remember learning from Dean Koontz in one of his early writing books way back in the day, was you don't want to use the wrong gun in a scene, in a thriller or mystery, that's going to kick people out of the story. Because the story is what's important, and the characters and their development are what's important. Similarly, you don't want to make a blatant, you know, silly stereotype,
right,
which throws the reader out of the story, who knows better, and says, well, wait a second, that's not true. Not all Canadians say a boot.
Don't like lie to me now. I've been living on that dream for years and years. Now, I think that in terms of, you know, for me, it's from a pack, you know, fat plus size. I'm getting older now, so I'm like an older woman. So like it can, and it can shift and change what your, right, your orientation is. I belong to the LGBTQ community. These are all things that you, some people keep their writing very, very light and airy, and you, it, those topics never don't come up at all.
Right.
So it's not a big deal, but if you're writing anything with weight, or you're stereotyping, or you might not even realize you're doing it. In fact, a lot of times you don't. That's why they exist. Right. That's why sensitivity readers exist, because you don't know what you don't know. And I do think it's an important thing. I love that they exist now. In fact, now that we've had this discussion, I think I'm going to try and find a sensitivity reader to come do a salon with us, because I would love to have that.
I think I can introduce you to a couple people I know if you don't have anyone. So
not off the top of my head. So yes, please.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that offline later on. Okay. Another question from Write Your Family History says, so wouldn't historical context, this is fascinating discussion. I'm learning so much. Wouldn't historical context editors also be important? I've found people project modern ideas on historical books that aren't representative. And I think we run into that risk of we know better now, but we maybe didn't know better then. And so this is the way that would have happened, even if it may be uncomfortable.
We call them dramaturgs, I think. Right? Isn't that the right word? Dramaturg. It's a weird word. Anyway, I think that it is important to, if the history is important in the book. If the book is a historical romance, and it doesn't really matter if the color green wasn't widely available and her gown is green and she's a poor person or whatever, like, right, those things, if that book is not what that's about, I would say it doesn't matter. If you're like one of those people who goes to the SCA reenactments or whatever, and it is really important to you to not have a zipper in your costume, if it's important to the writer that those things be accurate, I would say yes, you definitely want a context reader, or a context, a historical context reader to check on that for you, or somebody doing research. In my opinion, if I'm reading a historical romance, I probably wouldn't care I'm not going to go look it up. Like, I get really detailed because I'm a props person myself, and like a set decoration. I love eras and stuff. So like, to me, it's really important. Like when I did my book, I did research on the kinds of apples that grew in Scotland, you know, like that kind of thing. If I'm going to put an apple tree in Scotland, I want to know exactly what kind of apples grew during that time or whatever. However, it was not important to the story. And in fact, it slowed me down a lot.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's second draft material too, right?
Do what?
That could be second draft material if it's starting to bog you down. Thing, I have to stop and go look something up. No, get it written and then come back and fix it later.
And a fun thing I've learned to start doing with my husband, who does my first read through, he's a writer too, is if it's like a car, like I want a really cool car right here, I'll just put it in parentheses and he'll stick a car in there. And so like my witch drives this car in my new witch series. So it's like, he's like, I have this model. I was like, yes, I love it. And it goes with my theme. So, but what do you think? Do you think historical, how important do you think the historical aspect of something?
Well, I think it depends on who your readers are and who you're writing it for. And depending on how it pertains or doesn't pertain, because maybe it's an element you don't even need to include, something you can gloss over, let them fill it in with their own imagination. Or there are some writers who just really want to get it right and don't want to kick them out. So, Heather, we are running out of time. This has been such a fascinating discussion. Can you please remind listeners where they can find you online, where they can learn more about Write Women's Book Fest?
So I'm at hlbrooks.com. I'm on most social media platforms as HL Brooks Writes. And the Write Women Book Fest is the WRITE Women Bookfest.org. And we have Instagram and stuff. That's all on the website. I would just recommend going to the website for that. Okay. And we are almost out of tickets. I don't know when this is posting, but we're pretty low on tickets. So
we're live now. So it's live from September 15th onwards, but the audio was probably going to be in the future. It might even be past the date of the event. Heather, thank you so much for hanging out with me today.
Thank you.
And I just want to remind viewers where you can find out and not miss any of the awesome Draft to Digital Self-Publishing Insiders Live. Go to d2dlive.com to find out. Be sure to follow, like, and subscribe so you don't miss any of these fascinating chats. Even if you can't watch them live, you can always enjoy the replays later on. You can also check out more fun things over at d2d.tips/insight if you're looking for the business of writing and publishing. And of course, as always, some fantastic content from guest writers, as well as our amazing folks at drafttodigital.com/blog. Until next time, thanks again, Heather, for hanging out with me today. And thank you guys for watching and listening.
That's it for this week's Self-Publishing Insiders with Draft to Digital. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts and share the show with your will-be author friends. And start, build, and grow your own self-publishing career right now at drafttodigital.com.